Hey, what's going on, sports rehab experts? Today we're going to be talking everything you need to know about the foot and ankle as it relates to being able to walk, run, jog, sprint. Everything you need to know to keep you active, keep you running the miles that you want to run, or if you're just someone who likes to go for walk, hikes, enjoy some nature, this one's for you too. Many people start developing some type of foot pain within their lifetime. This results into a variety of different diagnoses. Today, what we're going to be talking about is two specific diagnoses that are sort of related to one another in the fact of their pain presentation being more nerve related. So the two diagnoses are tarsal tunnel syndrome and Morton's neuroma. Now, both of these refer to an entrapment or an irritation or sensitivity about the nerve. The location is a little bit different in either diagnosis. Tarsal tunnel is a little bit more up at the ankle joint itself. Morton's neuroma is down a little bit more towards the foot and the actual toes. Now, people often report some type of burning, achiness, throbbing, some type of nervish type pain that is associated with this, and it could be something that they experience throughout the entire day or when they're on their feet, or it could be as they walk for a certain number of miles or run, jog, or play a sport for a certain length of time. The more load that is applied, obviously the increased risk for sensitivity of a structure becomes, but ultimately the body should have the adaptability and the resiliency to avoid any type of those pain sensations that you may be currently getting if you have been diagnosed with either these issues. Now, first and foremost, we need to kind of put to rest a little bit of a myth here, because when people think about some type of foot issue, their first thought is to always, okay, what shoe can I get that's going to help me out a little bit more? Or what orthotic do I need to put in my shoe that's going to make my pain and my symptoms start to go away and make my foot feel a little bit better? Which is very odd in the respect that any other joint, any other injury, our first thought would be, okay, hey, what can we move? What can we mobilize? What can we strengthen to improve and decrease our pain and improve our body's resiliency? But for some reason with the foot, we just go immediately to shoes or immediately to orthotics for the solution, which is, again, is very odd given the fact that the foot itself actually has 33 joints. So that means when you have 2 feet, which most people do, that's 66 joints in total. That's a pretty large sum of joints given the fact that it actually comes out to being just under a quarter of joints in your total body. So that's a pretty large number of joints considering all the number of joints that you have from head to toe. Now, because of all those joints, there's obviously going to be a lot of different muscle attachments to those joints as well. And so the foot has this enormous amount of adaptability potential or strength potential or movement capability potential in its structure itself. But yet we never actually train our foot. Yes, you may have gone to PT and done some simple, silly towel crunches or picking up some marble or rolled a ball underneath the foot to try to help make it a little bit more flexible, or you did a couple calf stretches, but that's pretty basic. And if that's all that your PT or exercises that you've done up until this point in time, you're missing out on a lot of potential opportunity of what your foot could actually become. Is a source of strength, is a source of force attenuation, is a source of adaptability. That is what our foot was designed to do. Foot was designed to adapt to the surface of the ground underneath of it. And we've gotten away from that by putting people in shoes and putting people in orthotics. Now, I'm not suggesting that you go barefoot 24/7 all of a sudden, and that barefoot training is a solution for everybody. There are definite circumstances where using the proper footwear and the proper shoe could be a very useful adjunct to all of the training that we're going to be talking about with your foot here and all the mechanisms that we're going to be talking about from a biomechanical standpoint at your foot. But ultimately, the shoe in any type of orthotic that you may have is just an assist to what the foot is capable of doing on its own. And when we look at what the foot is capable of doing on its own, we need to look at this on a full spectrum of movement capabilities. So just as your body can rotate its head to the left and to the right, your foot has a variety of different movement options that span one extreme to another extreme. Now those two extremes are going to be, on one side you have a very flat foot, or a pronated foot, and on the other end of the spectrum you're going to have a very supinated or more rigid foot. Now neither foot structure is bad per se, but when we become limited in our spectrum of movement capabilities or options, that's when problems start to arise. So if someone has a very flat foot but doesn't know how to actively change their foot shape to make it resemble a more supinated or arched foot, that becomes a problem because they're limited to this end of the spectrum of a flat foot. Likewise, a very supinated or high arched foot lacks adaptability and force absorption capabilities because it cannot flatten. So it's on this end of the spectrum. And if the foot cannot achieve that flattened shape, then we reduce our capabilities to absorb attenuate forces because the flatter foot is a more expanded foot. The supinated foot is a more compressed foot. That's the easiest way to kind of think about those two extremes. And we need to be able to alternate back and forth between those extremes to, again, distribute forces, distribute pressure, so that pressure does not accumulate and pain is less likely to happen because you're absorbing and attenuating forces and producing forces using your whole entire foot, distributing that through the all 33 joints, and then using your whole kinetic chain, because there's going to be a ground reaction force that happens from the ground back up through your knees, through your hips, through your pelvis. That's also going to help out with that too. So the better adaptability and the better control you have over your foot, the more that's going to lead to positive benefits up the chain in other joints such as knee, hip, back, SI areas that a lot of people also complain about some type of pain or discomfort in. Now going back to the diagnosis, again, tarsal tunnel syndrome and Morton's neuroma, I mentioned how those are both nerve-related issues. And when you look at what nerves enjoy and what they like to ultimately experience less pain, nerves like three things. They like movement, they like blood flow, and they like space. So when you take away space and the area is more compressed, the nerve gets kind of claustrophobic, and ultimately the nerve can become sensitive or perhaps painful. If the nerve is not moving, again, the nerve moving and blood flow kind of go hand in hand, because both will happen. When movement happens, there's going to be increased blood flow. So if you're not moving, the nerve is not becoming stimulated, it's not receiving more blood flow, and ultimately, again, the nerve can become more sensitive or perhaps painful. Now, going back to the spectrum of movement capabilities that your foot should achieve, that flat, pronated force absorption foot, the high arch, rigid force propulsion foot, those full spectrum of movement capabilities. Now realize when you put yourself in a shoe, you're going to be limiting that full spectrum of movement capabilities and movement options to a degree. So if you pick a shoe, maybe you have a flatter foot and you pick a shoe that puts you into a little bit more of a high arched foot. Now all of a sudden you've biased your spectrum towards the supinated or that high arch rigid foot. Ironically, if you have that rigid foot to begin with, the solution for that is just to build up and support that arch even more. So then you're keeping yourself to biasing this one end of the spectrum. And you're not teaching the foot to have its full adaptability and full capability of movement. Now I mentioned how a shoe can be an assist, because it certainly can. Just because your foot is flat, it doesn't necessarily mean it achieved pronation very well. Just because your foot is high arched doesn't necessarily mean it performs supination well, and vice versa. It doesn't necessarily mean you can alternate from one end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum. So sometimes giving yourself some assist, similar to using a crutch when someone breaks their ankle and they're first starting to weight bear on that foot again, and gives them an assist to perform that movement a little bit more optimally, that in a sense is what a shoe or an orthotic is doing. But again, it's not giving you the full spectrum of movement options that you're able to achieve. But if you're never doing anything to actively train the foot to achieve those shapes better, then yeah, you're going to want to use a shoe to help restrict some of that motion in that instance, because when you perform pronation or when you perform supination, it doesn't necessarily mean you're doing it very well. Now, what do I mean by performing pronation and supination well? Now, the first concept you need to understand is that we need a tripod foot. So this is the biggest concept that is the most important to understand as it relates to any foot exercise you would do. It also relates to what you might be doing when you are squat, lunging, performing any exercises in the gym as well. So you should have three points of contact. That's a heel, big toe, little toe. And you want to be able to maintain those three points of contact as your foot shifts and manipulates pressure. So when you are walking, you're going to go from three different phases. So you're before you touch the ground with your heel, your foot's going to be in supination. And then initially you're going to hit with your foot in supination. That heel is going to hit the ground. You're going to hit on the outside aspect of your heel. And then the gravity will force you to kind of roll to the inside of the heel. You'll get pressure to the midfoot and to the inside of the foot to allow you access to the big toe. The big toe then going into extension creates this pulley mechanism or retensioning of the foot through a mechanism called the windlass mechanism, and that is what creates resupination. So you go from supination to pronation back to supination. Now the final supination is toe off, so the heel will actually be off the ground, which is why you need the windlass mechanism to occur, which is necessary for your big toe to be extended into about 60 degrees of extension to create that reaction of supination and that tension of the arch to create the resupination and the re-arching of the foot in that instance. So there's always going to be this three-point of contact consideration that we must have as we transfer towards toe off. The toe off position, we use the windlass mechanism to resupinate the foot at that point in time. But again, you can see how the foot goes from either end of the spectrum, from supination to pronation, and moves back and forth fluidly. And that the ability to do that allows you to attenuate forces, produce force, and attenuate and move back and forth, which is necessary for walking, running, any type of movement related activity. You have to produce force and you have to absorb force. And the more your body can do that efficiently with less energy consumption or less strain on the biomechanic system and the structures associated with that, the more resilient your body is going to be and feel because you're doing it in the most efficient manner possible. So just to kind of wrap up here, we're going to give you a couple takeaways. If you're dealing with anything tarsal tunnel related or Morton's neuroma related, as far as very common presentations that I've noticed in the clinic and dealing with these individuals as it relates to runners or athletes of all nature. Now remember, nerves like three things. They like movement, they like space, they like blood flow. So commonalities that I see in tarsal tunnel syndrome is someone who presents in this either supinated state or this pronated state or this flat foot state and the high arch state, and they can't move well between the two. So if they're in this high arch state, again, the foot is in a little bit, the heel actually is in a little bit more of calcaneal inversion, which creates a little bit more compression on the inside aspect of the heel, which would create compression to where the tarsal tunnel would be. Vice versa to that is someone who is a little bit more flat footed. That individual is a little bit, their heel is a little bit more everted or pushed to the side, and there's this gapping that happens on the inside of the foot. So that gapping is useful because it gives a different type of pressure, but that pressure is now tension as opposed to compression on the other span. So if you're stuck on the pronated side, you're stuck on a little bit more of a tension. It's like you're kind of constantly tugging on that nerve or constantly tugging on that muscle, and it never gets to ease and relax by going to more of a contracted state. And vice versa, if you're in that contracted state, you're always compressing the area and you're never elongating and expanding the area. So again, the solution is actually just teaching your body to effectively go from supination to pronation, keeping three points of contact as you perform. So, you know, you could just be standing actively doing that, but then ultimately you want to kind of take that into a more dynamic activity such as a lunge, such as a squat, such as a weight shifting activity, and make sure that you're capable of doing that optimally. Now, Again, there's a lot of specificity to it. Again, I mentioned there's 33 joints in the body and a lot of different muscles that are associated with the foot too. A lot of people do need a little bit of assist with this. And so sometimes we'll use different mats or wedges to kind of allow the foot to achieve these shapes that we're trying to teach it. Because sometimes, again, you do need that assist. But ultimately, what we're trying to go back to constantly is you actively achieving those shapes on your own, as opposed to relying on a foot, as opposed to relying on a shoe wear or an orthotic to keep you in that shape. Because if you're keeping yourself in that shape, then you can't display that full spectrum of movement capabilities, movement options. So you're not actually addressing the root cause of the problem. More times than not, you're just doing something that makes the symptoms feel a little bit better at that particular moment in time. And then there are certain instances where I've found that shoe wear and orthotics have absolutely no impact on the individual too. So again, we have to look at more of a movement-based approach to solving these problems, and your movement-based approach is teaching the foot to achieve these two different shapes and achieving these two different shapes well. Now, if you're someone dealing with Morton's neuroma and you're still sticking around watching this, I appreciate it. Last up is the forefoot. So when you look at the ability to achieve supination and pronation, you can actually break your foot up into thirds: the heel, the midfoot, and then the toes, because there's going to be components of this at each one of those areas. So Morton's neuroma relates to the end third. Tarsal tunnel relates more to the beginning third. And again, if you don't have each of those thirds working optimally through both ends of the spectrum, then you're going to have a limited capability of achieving both ends of the spectrum. So just because you have a diagnosis that relates to just the forefoot or just the rear foot, it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to neglect the other two thirds of the foot. Those two thirds of the foot are very important to still train and teach the movement spectrum of pronation and supination to still distribute force throughout the whole entire foot, which allows you to distribute force up the kinetic chain a little bit better, and ultimately leads to better results. So Morton's neuroma, usually this one's a little bit more of an individual who has a lack of pronation at the distal third of their foot. So when I talk about that, their foot and the toes are more compressed inward, and this compression usually leads to irritation about the nerves. Now, just as with tarsal tunnel, there certainly could be the instance where that foot is extremely adaptable and really expands and kind of pulls and tugs and is very creates that tension on the nerve 24/7, which isn't ideal either. Again, we need that full movement spectrum. But more times than not, what I've seen is more of a lack of foot adaptability at the forefoot and the toes, where there's more of this compressed state. Usually these are individuals who have worn high heels for either work or their whole entire life, or they wear a very narrow shoe. And again, this is a footwear causing the problem, where it creates more compression. So a lot of times, one of the simplest things you can do is actually just get a shoe with a toe box that's a little bit wider, which allows your toes to spread. But again, taking more movement and active based approach, what we can do is we can take this weight shifting and whole idea of taking someone to more of this pronated flat foot shape, which creates more expansion at the foot. When you pronate, your foot will flatten and spread out and gap. So what we can do is we can put one foot in front of the other, we can weight shift forward. And as you weight shift forward, you should feel the pressure going down on your foot, which allows the foot to kind of spread and gap out. And then we're going to bias that towards the forefoot as much as we can. Now we can use, like I mentioned before, we use mats, wedges, and things like this to help emphasize the movement or create a little bit more of an extreme at one end of the spectrum so they can experience that end of the spectrum. So I put up a picture here of me showing an exercise with somebody that used two mats on either side of their forefoot to allow them as they weight shift forward. This creates a little bit more of a hammock effect by raising both ends of the two ends of the tripod. So big toe and pinky toe, the heel is still going to be back here, but we're weight shifting forward over top of the foot. And because we've raised both of those big toe and little toe up, it creates this kind of hammock effect where it allows for more surface area to create more spreading. And that spreading, again, is usually what creates a lot of relief in these type of patients. So again, that would be very, very symptomatic relief, focusing on the site of pain, but potentially your ability to really flatten and gap and emphasize this spreading of the foot could actually come from a limitation of the previous two-thirds, the middle foot and the rear foot. Because if those two areas are stuck, it's not gonna allow the distal third to spread like it's capable of doing either. So again, you have to take the whole foot into consideration, which is why hopefully you, at this point in time, you can see the two correlations between tarsal tunnel and Morton's neuroma, that really the result that you're trying to achieve is just a better experience of a full spectrum of movement at the foot, and not biasing someone to one of the spectrum versus the other by never training the foot or putting someone into a shoe or orthotic. It doesn't mean that shoe or orthotic couldn't be useful for somebody at a particular moment in time, but they need to also be able to actively take a movement-based approach into solving this problem. And oftentimes that leads to a much better result, especially for individuals who are trying to get back to higher levels of activity, such as walking, running, or playing a sport for an extended period of time. Hey, thanks for watching. Hope you got a lot out of the information in today's video. If you like this type of content, if you could do us a huge favor by liking the channel, subscribing to the channel, and hit that alert button so you get notified when any new videos come out your way. Also, if you're a rehab clinician looking to take your clinical skill knowledge to the next level and seeing how you can better help your patients, visit sportsrehabexpert.com, where we got a lot more information that can help you along the way, as well as our certified sports rehab expert course. This is two courses that give you a sports rehab residency or an orthopedic fellowship type education in half the time at a fraction of the cost. So visit sportsrehabexpert.com to check out these two courses. We have the Human Assessment Mastery course and the Full Body Treatment Domination course. And finally, maybe you aren't a rehab clinician watching this video. Maybe you're someone just looking to keep an active, healthy, mobile, athletic lifestyle without painkillers and frequent visits to the doctor's office. If you're located in Ann Arbor, Michigan, you're in luck. Just visit annarbor.physio and you can set up your appointment today. If you're not from around the Ann Arbor or the Michigan area, no worries. We do a lot of online video consultation services from people all over the globe as well too. So you can reach us at annarbor.physio or at sportsrehabexpert.com, and we'd love to learn more about how we can help you out.